Hello and welcome to Pro U Podcast, episode number 398, two away from 400. Cognitive dissonance. Working out with my buddy, Scotty Mosher, and we were having a chat. And I brought up something about wanting something and then not wanting something, or needing something and then wondering why I would need that, like kind of opposing forces. And boom, he came up with the fantastic verbiage, cognitive dissonance. So I Googled it, looked at it, and went, that's fantastic. But I'm talking about the watcher. You ever heard about the watcher self, the watcher in you? Never heard about that. Found an article on it, and I kind of dug it. I really related, really resonated. So I'm sharing that well. And then the whole, you know, keeps on coming, like this articles that appear about meditation and yoga, and they kind of resonate with me. So I share another one about the emotional impact of yoga and doing the things that we do. And it was, to me, it was really, really similar to the Pro You moment. So just me sharing the world that I'm walking through. I feel good. I think I'm doing good. And it's a little like the cognitive dissonance, like a two opposing thoughts simultaneously resting in your head, causing conflict internally. And I think there's been a little bit of that. And now kind of I'm aware of the term and what it is. So I'm looking at it. And again, a lot of, you know, I've always said the whole pro-you path of self-discovery, that doesn't mean joy. Yay, bunnies, unicorns, rainbows. You know, the whole path of self, like, you know, oh, that's what that is. Or, oh, that's what I'm going through. And like the moving thing has become a thing where I was just like, I just want to be done thinking about it. Like it just, like it was like just finding out like how comfortable I am and finding out how much I like Rincon and how comfortable my everything is. And I don't want to get uncomfortable unless I feel, you know, this amazing place. And I've yet to find that, yet to stumble upon it. So organizing your thoughts, identifying your thoughts, being aware of your thoughts, picking your thoughts, it's not something you acquire by graduate and achieve. It's a forever thing, but you're worth it. So am I. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Ego says, once everything falls into place, I will find peace. Spirit says, find peace and everything will fall into place. I believe depression is legitimate, but I also believe that if you don't exercise, eat nutritious food, get sunlight, get enough sleep, consume positive material, surround yourself with support, then you aren't giving yourself a fighting chance. You can lead a human to knowledge, but you can't make him think, said a horse. Sometimes you have to let go of the picture of what you thought life would be like and learn to find joy in the story you are actually living. Actually living. If you are never alone, you cannot know yourself. And if you do not know yourself, you will begin to fear the void. The present moment is as it is, always. Can you let it be? You reach a point where you feel yourself going through an awakening. You look at what you used to do and who you used to be. It hurts because you realize you believed in and promoted nonsense. You grow, you evolve, and you stop because you no longer operate at that frequency. As a result, there's certain people that you have to walk away from. As a result, you start to realize just how messed up the world is. You want to help, you want to heal, you want to make it better. This is how you know you're awakening a higher level of consciousness. Most of our difficulties, our hopes, and our worries are empty fantasies. Nothing has ever existed except this moment. That's all there is. That's all we are. Yet most human beings spend 50 to 90% or more of their time in their imagination, living in fantasy. We think about what has happened to us, what might have happened, how we feel about it, how we should be different, how others should be different, how it's all a shame, and on. It's all a fantasy, all imagination. Memory is imagination. Every memory that we stick to devastates our life. We are here to find that dimension within ourselves that is deeper than thought. Last one. If you are lonely when you're alone, you are in bad company. I like that one. So I am on the Buddha Groove, and it's so funny. I think I've seen him before, you know, called Cairn, C-A-I-R-N, Cairn. That's what I mentioned, the four alternative ways to meditate. And it said one is corn, Cairn, balancing or stacking. Well, on this Buddha Groove website, they sell these little stacks of stones. I'm like, oh, look. And I clicked on it. They sell earrings, necklaces, and ones for the garden. I mean, I was like, wow, they got a whole line of what I refer to as my faith stones, but that kind of stuff. Who knew? All right. So this is a trippy one. I liked it. So I'm going to share it. I hope that's okay. It just sounded really weird. Mastering the Watcher. Huh? You're in now, aren't you? Huh? Got your attention? In any given situation, you have two energies that guide your reactions. The primitive part of your mind reacts to threats to your safety, while your watcher is a casual observer of all that's going on. Here's how to make better use of your watcher so you have more control over emotional reactions to life. Okay. Why you react automatically to threatening situations. The primitive part of the brain began as a way to keep you from harm. In the early days of human existence, threats to your safety came from being eaten by a predator or falling off a cliff. Your brain responded to such threats quickly because if you stopped to think about it first, you might become some wild animal's lunch. This part of your brain was in control long before the emotional part of the brain developed, fight or flight. Now, threats come in many different forms. They may seem minor when compared to being eaten, but your brain sees them as threats nonetheless. Some of these threats you may have experienced. Your supervisor yells at you for not getting a project done. Your partner criticizes you for being disorganized. And another driver cuts you off in traffic. All of these situations trigger the safety response, causing you to storm out of your office, raise your voice at your partner, or raise your finger at the other driver. These responses happen so quickly that you may not even know what you're doing until afterwards. As my hand slowly rises. Luckily, you have another part of you available to take control of your responses. And this is kind of like, yeah, kind of what was happening or has been happening. The watcher is the part that actually gives you a choice of how you react. When you master working with your watcher, you'll be more in control of how you respond to the world. And that makes total sense. I mean, I'm walking proof of that. Not perfect, but all of that completely made sense to me. Tapping into the watcher. Your watcher is there all the time, just like part of your brain that has the responses to perceive threats. But the watcher is a passive energy that you must actively engage until the mind had sufficiently or had developed sufficiently to let the watcher take charge. And that's what's kind of weird. It's like I can kind of feel moments where automatically things are happening that I used to have to work on. And I'm like, well, that's kind of cool. So that, again, there were parts of this that were really resonating with me. Here's the one way to connect with your watcher. It says, here is one way, and it lists 8. Dunut. Find a quiet place in which to sit for a few moments. Oh, okay, I guess it's 8 steps to doing it one way. My bad. My bad, Buddha Guru. Sorry for doubting you. Number 1, find a quiet place in which to sit for a few moments. Take a few deep breaths as you relax your mind. Imagine yourself at the base of your spine, at the root chakra. Slowly begin to rise up through your spine and all of the chakras. When you get to your crown chakra, look down at yourself. Allow yourself to slip through your crown chakra and float up above yourself. Continue looking down at yourself as you float upward a foot or two. This is the place where your watcher resides, and you are now viewing yourself as your watcher does. While in this space, recall one of the events from above, such as being cut off in traffic, as the watcher observes the event as it unfolded. The watcher has no judgment and will look at the event in a way your primitive mind can't. As the watcher, you'll ask yourself, what is the real threat here? What is the intention of the other person to do me harm? What is the best response to the situation that's for the highest good of all involved? So that was kind of like where it's like you stop and then you kind of pause and you can tell the old you would have done A, but now you kind of are doing a B thing. And again, resonated with me. Integrating the watcher. You will need to practice the exercise until you can quickly enable the watcher. And again, kind of what I've been experiencing. I mean, again, talking to a client the other day, and I'm like, you just started. Like, because you're like, oh, I discovered this pro you stuff does not mean you're done. It completely is the opposite. Now you've begun. But yay, you're on a better path. But yeah, you've just begun. So you got to work. You don't get to anyone sitting around waiting to get to that place where you don't have to work on you. That's the first mistake. You will need to practice the exercise until you can quickly enable the watcher. Imagine yourself popping up above you into that watcher state instantaneously. Develop the habit of asking, what would my watcher do? And again, this is, a client said separation is real. It's separating that. And if you can stop, pause, separate, float a little bit higher, look down, however you want to verbalize it. It's literally taking the perspective without feeling. Picking a perspective without feeling in it. I'm in it. It hurt. Therefore, I'm going to respond as this hurt person. When you've mastered this, you'll be able to slip into that watcher state before your primitive mind has a chance to respond. With the watcher in control, you'll have more options as how to respond, and you'll be in charge of the response. Your responses will have a more positive effect, and you'll no longer face the uncomfortable situation of the consequences of an unwanted response. So yeah, I like that. And been talking about, you know, meditation and yoga, you know, through these articles that I've been reading lately. And this was another one about our emotional responses to yoga. We know that yoga asanas are intended to have a particular effect on the physical body. Muscles, ligaments, and tendons are all stretched and strengthened by individual asanas and sequences of yoga poses. Circulation is improved. Individual organs and the body's systems are nourished by yoga. This partly accounts for the general feeling of well-being we experience after a good yoga class or session, as particular yoga asanas can target different areas of the body. It may be no surprise that they can also impact us on an emotional level. This is kind of that cool thing. Body memory. The theory of body memory is based on the idea that the body itself, not just the mind, can store memories of life events, usually repressed memories, which means they are sometimes based on traumatic or particularly intense circumstances. As yoga works on our bodies on deep levels, it has the potential to release or activate body memory. Through this can be unsettling. It also has the chance to be therapeutic. Practicing yoga poses that are associated with the body memory may be one way to work through the emotions associated with these events. And to me, this is that, you know, working on yourself stuff. When you start doing this, this is the deep stuff. This is the work. I think they've also referred to it as like shadow work. As different bodies have different physical abilities and issues with particular asanas, it would seem natural that we might have different emotional responses to certain poses. While most people feel uplifted by back bends, they may make some people anxious or uneasy. You may find forward bends calming and comforting most of the time, but on a particular day, they may feel depressing. Most regular yogis have heard stories of someone crying as an emotional release during yoga class, which I have. This is not to say you should expect this to happen, but it can happen to some people some of the time. And my ex was a massage therapist, and there's more than probably a handful of times that she was massaging someone and they would just start crying. And that's a fact. Yoga as therapy. By practicing a full range of asanas, we can balance our emotional levels, which kind of starts making sense. If there's a pose that unsettles us, there is another pose that will bring us back to a centered state of well-being. If we believe in the value of yoga as therapy, as we work through emotions with yoga, the poses that used to bring discomfort become easier for us. With time, we find a state of ease. With experience, we learn which asanas can help us prepare for or deal with particular situations or states of mind. Most yoga practitioners believe in the power of the mind-body connection. The health of the mind can affect the body and vice versa. Yoga is based on the union of the body and mind, and it can help us use one to heal the other. I like that. You know, it's the union of the body and the mind and how we use one to help heal the other. And again, at the very end, I talk about pro-you moments at the end of each episode. But I talk about breathing and focusing on your breath, which is your mind connecting to like a bodily function, which connects your mind and body, which makes you present, makes you in the moment. So you see some repetition when you start kind of looking at all this different stuff that it's about, you know, meditation, yoga, foam rolling, being in quiet, stopping, pausing, reflecting, you know, looking at yourself, doing things differently. And, you know, to me, it's all on the same tree, a bunch of different branches, but it's all on the same tree and all to a better you. So I was chatting with Mr. Mosier, and I can't exactly remember what it was exactly that I said, but I think it was along the lines of, you know, I had searched a little bit for the place to live, move. And it was like I kind of kept finding, well, I wouldn't move there. Okay, I wouldn't move there. Well, I really like Rincon. It's like, okay, I want to do this. I was like, but I wasn't like finding this, you know, magical place to move. So I was like, well, so that there was like an unsettled. Then again, after the whole art thing, you know, it was like a lot of stuff to do. And then there wasn't stuff to do. So I felt like this unsettled anxiousness. And it's like, well, you should get going. You know, you should check it out. And I've taken, I think, a total of 2-3-ish trips around Ojai, where I think might be the place. And one was the first one, and I just, you know, completely fell in love with it, but, you know, didn't like really stop anywhere, didn't, you know, like make a connection, you know, didn't, you know, anything like that. But I stopped at the river, and I thought that was super dope. And then the next trip, I went the other route. You can kind of come the north from the coast towards Ojai, and it's by this lake. So I decided to take that route, and it turned out to be I may have mentioned this now, I'm like, have I mentioned that? But it turned out to be a man-made reservoir, which was still kind of pretty and cool, but there's only one entrance, and it was a whole thing. You know, there's no just, oh, walk down and walk around the lake kind of thing at all. And by the time I took that route, got to Ojai, it was like Friday afternoon, and I could just tell like the traffic was, you know, getting heavier. And I'm like, I was just kind of like a little bit tired from the drive and a little bit drained. And I was like kind of a letdown with the lake thing. So I'm like, I just don't want to hang out in traffic anymore. So I kind of left. And when I was home, I was like, and that's when it really hit me. I was like, look, you got this, you know, kind of yucky feeling, and you haven't had that forever. And it's about a choice. Like, you can or you don't have to. Like, you're fine. Your world's fine. Where you live is fine. You're fine. Zen's healthy. The world is good. You go to Rincon. You do your art. Like, it is good. Now, have you thought about moving? Yes. Okay, there it is. It's that. You get to not, well, I decided to, so I'm going to. And I told him, it was like this weird thing, because it's like more and more. It's like, well, I am comfortable. Like, I really think I could drop Zen off anywhere around my house and he'd find his way home. So he's super comfortable. And we know the neighbor dogs. And, you know, I take him to this puppy park, or I take him to the river. You know, there's places I take him and certain walks. And we get up every morning and we run. And it's just easy. Like, I kept looking like, my life is so comfortable. My life is so easy. And I've been on line, I think, 2 or 3 times. And I just went, you know, rentals. Apartments for rent in Ojai, and like nothing comes up, and I'm like, it's just kind of odd to me that like nothing comes up at all. So I'm like, I don't know what exactly to do, or if I just got to kind of drive there and knock on doors, or, you know, try to make some contacts. And then I went, shh. And I think that was what I was telling Scott. It's like, you know, I don't want to move, and I want to move. And he was like, cognitive dissonance. And it was really trippy what he said next, because he mentioned Duncan Trussell's name. And I was like, what? And he says, yeah, I was talking to Duncan Trussell. You know, we were talking about cognitive dissonance. I said, wait, how do you? And so I briefed Scotty on, you know, it was like the first podcast. Well, I think it was the only podcast I've ever been on. But I was going to be his trainer. You know, I guess just the friends of the friends that I had met, because I remember getting it. It's like, you know, Duncan Trussell, D-U-N-C-A-N, like Duncan. Like, I was like, what is that name? Like, I've never heard that name. And Trussell, it's like Duncan. I was like, and then he's like the nicest guy. And he's like, you know, be my trainer, and we're going to put it on this podcast, and, you know, we're going to like chart my path and my growth. And I was like, oh my God. So end up going to his house, sitting in his living room, and we're just chatting. I remember this so vividly because it had like this huge impact on me. He was like this super nice guy, super funny, you know, total trippy dude, which I loved. And he's like, you know, we started talking about the podcast. He's like, I said, well, I kind of thought about doing one. I think this is when I was kind of playing with Mike Furman, and we were kind of doing some test recording. And he's like, oh, you should do it. You just do it in your living room, man. I'm going to do it right here now. And he's just so like gave me permission in that moment. And I, you know, Hardwick kind of was like, okay, like I'd be the physical, like, okay, here you go. That's how you get on iTunes. Go, non-nerdist. But it was like the emotional, mental part where this guy was like, yeah, just go ahead and do it. And I just, you know, so much wanted to like keep in touch with that guy, but like his life got like gnarly. Like he got testicular cancer and then his mother passed away. And I guess, and then Mosher City's got this show called Midnight Gospel, animated series on Netflix, which I'm going to totally check that out, but I guess it's pretty amazing. And he's married, he's got two kids, and I was like, no way, that's like totally like a crazy story. But I don't know, I just love hearing about Duncan, and he was just a super good guy that, you know, there was just a moment, like we didn't even continue at the second podcast, like it was just done after that first one, but it was impactful, and I've always wanted to thank that dude. So he brought up cognitive dissonance, and I was like, well, what is that? And he says, well, that's, and then I'll read it. In psychology, cognitive dissonance is the mental stress or discomfort experienced by an individual who holds two or more contradictory beliefs, ideas, or values at the same time, or is confronted by new information that conflicts with existing beliefs, ideas, or values. Leon Festinger's theory of cognitive dissonance focuses on how humans strive for internal, this made sense, how humans strive for internal consistency. When inconsistency, dissonance, is experienced, individuals tend to become psychologically uncomfortable. That was me. It's like, what is that thing? And I'm like, I'm kind of uncomfortable psychologically. And they are motivated to attempt to reduce this dissonance, as well as actively avoiding situations and information which are likely to increase it. So it's kind of that thing where I was like, I just, like, gonna not think about, like, you know, there's no like, oh, bad here where I live, like I'm getting kicked out, or, you know, there's nothing, there's no timer, there's no pressure outside at all. I'm like, I can chill here for as long as I want and be happy while I pursue moving, and that just feels better, sounds better. Oh, and one thing I forgot to mention, when I was talking about the yoga and all that and the meditation, and I started a Sunday morning stretch class on my ProU Facebook page, Sunday morning, 7 a.m. my time, Pacific time. Not sure if I mentioned that on the podcast or not, but it's that same kind of thing. I'm doing a little bit of movement, a little bit of mobility, a little bit of stretching, and I'm going to obviously chat, but I don't, you know, even have music because I don't want to compete with my voice. Got a little fountain rolling, just very quiet, very intimate, and, you know, I wake up that, you know, probably 5:30, 6 o'clock at some point, take Zen out for a walk run, and I come back and get Zen settled and set up the camera, and I'm like, it's 7 a.m., and I'm like, you know, still a little tight, you know, from the night. And I'm like, hey, I said I'm going to do this and I need to focus. And it started. But all of that stuff, like I feel so much better after. And I do like teaching, but the physical part of it, like just doing that half an hour stretch the last 3 Sundays in a row, I can tell I feel better. But that was prompted by going, I need to do the pigeon stretch in one way or another more. I could just tell that that line on my body was the tightest line. So at night, I just started holding stretches, the pigeon stretch more, and I started using the foam roller to kind of emphasize the stretch. And pretty soon, the foam roller, my foam rolling sessions became doing the majority of that, because I could tell the opening, that was starting to happen. It's like, all right, bend that front leg, put it on the foam roller, sit there, hang, other leg. And I was like, okay, I'm getting somewhere. Like I started like in the last few weeks really figuring out how to stretch, because I'm like, I worked out and I'm sore, like achy sore. I'm like, what's the deal? And it's literally about just stretching more. Like literally me who stretches and foam rollers, and it's like, oh, that's all I do. I'm not working out. I'm not lifting heavy. Why? You got to stretch more. What it is, your age, your biomechanics, I don't know, but you just got to stretch more, because I'll just touch my calf and I'm like, there's a knot. I mean, I can always feel throughout my entire calf like knots. And I'm like, well, you just have to keep stretching those. And then when you do the upper body, anything, you got to stretch that during, after, and then on the off days, you got to just be stretching those areas all the time. And that's a lot of work, because it seems like I'm foam rolling all day and then I'm adding stretching. Now I'm doing a stretch class on Monday. I'm like, well, you know what? I'm worth it. Like it really kind of comes down to that. I'm going to put in this work because I like feeling the way I do. And I'm kind of, well, I improved that area. Well, that's getting better. Well, I mean, I never used to run, never really could run. My feet pointed outwards. You know, I changed my gait. I can run. I think I can run pretty far. I mean, I don't run that far, but I run six mornings, you know, and I'm fine after it. I foam roller probably 2-3 times a day, and I kind of started working out sporadically, little bits here and there. Like, I feel good. And I'm like, but the inside between my ears is insanely good. So overall, I'm like, wow, I dig me. Like, it's the, I thought last year, 2020, turning 55, I'm like, oh, this is the best me, and it was at that point. But then it just got a little bit better, because now I'm a year into that version. I'm a year better because I've been practicing and I've been doing that stuff. And then when I feel a little tremor, a little ripple, dissonance, and that's what it was. It was like, wait a minute, wait a minute. You get to move. you know, that's like a good thing. You know, if it becomes a funky thing, then just stop thinking about it. And I remember when that's exactly what happened. I just thought about it when I started the podcast. I mean, I had healed for a year and a half, got to a good place. And I'm like, I have a message. Be thankful. Be mindful. And I was about a month into the podcast, kind of getting ready. And I remember I was just stressed. And I was like, whoa. And I just literally like had a sit down moment with myself going, there's no way I'm going to allow me, you, to just kind of allow this yuck to come back in after you've spent how long getting yuck out and you feel great and now you're choosing to do something for free because you want to help people. You cannot allow that to become a stressful thing. And, you know, that's just in my head. And I was like, wait a minute, the move thing. You don't have to. There's no time. There's no pressure. Like, this is, yay. Go there once a month. Go there. Don't go for 3 months. Let it pass, whatever. Like, in that total control of it. But that, let that, I want to move. I don't have to move. And now that you're aware, you know, it's just like we become psychologically uncomfortable. I was like, oh, okay, so that's what it is. And then Moser, when we were talking, he says, like, intentional living. He goes, you and I have different lives, but we both have, you know, intentional living on our minds. And it was just kind of cool. He said that because I'd never heard those two words. So like I say, live efficiently. And I've said that a bunch, and that's kind of what he meant. Or what he was referring to was, you know, an unexamined life is a life not worth living. Sent him that quote. And he goes, I've always thought that. So that intentional living, like, why are you doing the things? Why are you allowing the things in your life? Why do you have the things in your life? Why are you allowing those thoughts? Why are you having those thoughts, those experiences, those moments? All of that. And then, oh, it was kind of cool news episode 400 is coming up, and I got a guest, which is really trippy because I don't have guests. I haven't had guests for a long time. I mean, I had a few clients over COVID, but total, and I'm going to keep it a surprise. But I got way kind of excited because I thought about asking this person because it was like like I'm a fan of this person. I'm like, it was kind of like, hey, be on my podcast so I get to talk to you. And I don't care if anybody listens, was always in the back of my mind. So it just like took a long time, but I asked and this person like replied just immediately like, yep, well, I'll do it. I was like, oh my God. And I was telling Scott that. And I said, you know, I just hate asking people. And he just stops. He goes, you got to ask yourself why. I was like, well, you know, I just don't like bothering people. He goes, well, and then it was kind of cool because at this moment, it's like, that's a friend. Like they can call you out on something, but how they do it and knowing you so well. Because I was like, yeah, you know, you're right. I shouldn't, because I've always been like that. And I'm like, well, I think it's, you know, kind of like from my father. Like I remember him like never, ever asking a neighbor for help. But if any neighbor at any time asked my father for help, he was out the door. Like didn't even like, all right, he could be in the middle of doing something. I remember one time we were digging this hole or something in the yard and this neighbor comes up, starts talking and asked my dad to come over and help him. Like while he was working, you know, the neighbor didn't offer to ask my dad to, the neighbor didn't offer to help my dad, but then asked him to help him. So I'm like, well, and Scott's like, yeah, you know, you probably kind of learned that behavior. And I said, well, one thing that always stuck to me was someone said, like, you like giving. I said, yeah. I go, well, why? It's like, well, I like making people feel that way. It's like, well, there's people that want to give to you. And when you don't take, you're taking away that moment from them, that ability to feel good for, you know, giving something to you, because I'm not a good taker. But also the same thing, you know, follow suit with the whole, I don't like asking people for, I hate relying on people, like depending on people, needing people, like I got to ask this person. And he's like, well, there you go. That's something you definitely got to look at. And, you know, we were talking, it made sense. Like, he goes, that's your perspective, going, oh, my God, I'm going to bother this person and ask them. And that person could be like, oh, my God, cool, I love doing podcasts. You know, you have no idea. So if you're constantly stuck in that perspective of this is how you view this, and again, don't examine it, don't question it, you may not ever find out that there's a better way to do it. So that is something that I am currently now working on. I'm going to be like, okay. So when I ask someone something, I'm going to be, you know, hyper aware of like, you know, how are you feeling? Why are you feeling this way? Or whatever it is. So the last thing is, it's like one of the most uncomfortable things for me to chat about, because there's a large part of me that's like, you know, I'm not going to talk about that. I don't want to bring that up. But it's my first therapist said you kick people off your bus. It's your bus. You can invite them back on. You can kick them back off again. That's kind of how you have to be with your life. You can kick people out. Let them back in. They mess, you know, kick, you know. You got to have boundaries. You got to protect yourself. The whole pro you thing. Well, I got to be the best I am by the choices that I've made. So I'm like, okay, I'm good because it's all reinforced. Every decision I've made, I love because I got here. And I don't care if anybody believes that or not. I know who I am. So I don't really question any of my choices. Because I'm like, well, that felt good. I like me. Done. And it's just 2 + 2 = 4. Moving on. And I've used the analogy of like living in this castle I built, dug a moat, filled it with crocodiles, pulled up the drawbridge, and I'm like, you know, it doesn't sound comfortable, but man, I just feel so good. Like you can see the people and moments and whatever on the other side. People lighting themselves on fire, just bad experiences, kryptonite. I'm like, well, yeah, it's still there, but man, I feel good. The moat's dug, the moat's filled. Crocodiles, the drawbridge is up. I'm sitting in the castle I built. No one can get in. But if someone like knocks on the window and I'm like, how did you get across the moat? So, I don't know, it was about a month or two ago, I noticed my younger brother was following me on Instagram. And I was like, what? Or was viewing it and doing my story, but I just saw his name. I went, what are you doing? Like, you blocked me on Facebook. And, you know, you've been, I just, this whole, everything about him. And online, you know, never to my face, you know, on the keyboard, over the phone, text, just all the stuff and the noise. And I'm like, and now you're trying to peek, like, and I just, boom, sent them an email. And it was not pretty. And I got done, and I was like, wow, I guess you know how you feel about him. And it was kind of shocking in a sense, but I was like, because it just like, no, you're not. You don't get to, no. Like, I built this life without any of y'all's help. So I'm going to enjoy it, and you don't get to. And I do not want to contact these people because that's, oh, I'm in the mud. And once you're in the mud, oh, now they can fire back. And now you're in it. And that's why I never said anything, never read nothing. Don't explain it, nothing. But I had to with the little brother. And then a few days ago, I see my mother on my found art page because you can block people on Facebook. But if you have another page, they can follow that page. And then you have to go to that page and you have to ban them from that page. But they have to make a comment on that page. You can ban. It's this whole process. And it's just, oh. And I'm like, why are you? And it was just this stop. And I just got up, went over, sat down, emailed her. So you had 51 years to do different. 51 years. Pick a different side. Pick my side. Stand up for me. Never happened. But I got nasty letters, emails. I said, I'm happy with my decisions. I dig my life. You and that guy you live with made your choices. Now you live with them. And that's exactly what I said. Sent that email and then blocked that. Just like I sent my brother's email and blocked that. I'm not dealing. I'm not chatting. We're not having back and forth. But I ain't trying to look at your life. I ain't trying to get in. So stop. You got nothing to do with me no more. And yesterday I told that to a client. Like, that's not, oh, yay, look at me. I'm so proud. I'm so happy. Look what I said. No, it's not it at all. I know how I got here. I know exactly what I did. I know the chances I gave. I know the second chances I gave. I know how much I tried. I know how much I put in. I know everything. And that's what led to the empowering moment where I said, okay, I'm done. 51. No one's texting, no one's reaching out, no one's visiting, no one's calling unless I do first. So I'm going to take all that time and energy, not put it into those people, those relationships, and I'm going to put it into me. That led me to 52. It's going, you know, I'm going to go on a spiritual journey. What's that? I don't know. No clue. But what I'm not going to pursue is everything I have pursued up until 51. Family, friends, girls, relationship, money, career, job, success, whatever. Not doing it. What are you going to do? No clue. Just try to be thankful and present. Year later, 53, well, now what? I mean, now what, Tom? What? You just keep doing what you're doing. Oh, okay. It's kind of weird to me, but they was like, well, yeah, you started at 52. It was like, okay, for a year you're going to do this and then something different. For some reason, I kind of felt that way. But then it just got better. And then it just got better. And 54 turned into 55, and 55 is when the magic happens, when I truly woke up and saw everything with clarity. And I'm like, okay, I did this. I feel this way. I've never been consistent. I feel good consistently. I see it this way. I feel it this way consistently. And it was beginning of 2020. I was like, this is going good. And then my birthday, this is going good. And then April pandemic. And I'm like, I'm still good. And all the way through that. All the way through 2020. I'm like, so now it's like, and this is the note I wrote. Everything is podcast fodder. So part of me is like, oh, look at that. Still trying to reach out, check up, see, get a, you know, look through the keyhole into my life. You don't get that. I'm like, that's not fun. That took a long time, but now I have clarity. You know, you chose, you completely chose him, his side, the entire time. Now you get that. Yay, I'm not mad. Don't care at all. I put that even in the email. I don't care at all. And that's the power. When you care, you're stuck in it. When you evolve and you get to a place where you don't care and you let go, you stop trying to get water from the rock. Again, lots of time and energy just boom falls into your lap. See, so that's kind of why I do what I do. I'm not going, yay, I'm alone, divorced twice, don't talk to my family. I'm going, yay, I'm the best I've ever been. Really? What'd you do? Oh, here, I'll tell you what I did. Not fun, not easy, not familiar, not comfortable. That's talking to a client yesterday. Gets it. Like, just started. Sees it perfectly. But she's still her. She's still got those deep grooves. She's got to identify those grooves. She's got to start letting those go, filling them in. She's got to start new grooves. And all this simultaneously. So that whole cognitive dissonance. Okay, I get I'm going to think different now. And I like that. But yet I still think bad and I feel bad. It's like, yep, that's you. That's kind of everybody. And more over time, you can get to that place where it said, you know, you do it a little more, you get better at it. You do it a little more. Pretty soon that watcher's going, oh, that person said that. Okay, well, that got nothing to do with you. Just walk away and see. And that's, again, just a better version of you. Stop and pause and reflecting so you can choose a response without basing it how you feel. That's what I'm selling today, kids. Come into my well, buying the water I sell. That's what I got going on today. I want to thank you for listening. I really do. Like, I dig having the podcast. I love having the podcast. And I'm just, you know, I am. I'm super thankful. I sit down and I just, you know, I love the opportunity to do it. And it helped me heal. So I'm in this great place where I know I can talk to anybody and I can point out things that are going to make them feel better. Like, I can do what I do well. I'm gifted as a mirror. I will show you the reflection I see. And then my goal is to get to you to see what I see. But there's the work. That's where it's on you. It's not quick, easy, comfortable, familiar, fun. But that's where you start going, okay, the perspective you got to get right now is you loving you because you woke up, because you, oh, I'm going to stop going left. I'm going to go right today. Not, is it easy? Is it hard work? Is it going to take a long time? Yes, all of that. But you're worth it. And you're doing it. And you get to. So all that is good. And if all that good ain't in your head, that's your problem. So I had a couple things happen that I wanted to add on to this episode. And because I'm the king, I can. But I decided to go with the title, Cognitive Dissonance. And I was thinking about it more. And I actually think when Mosher and I were chatting, it was when I was talking about being attached to certain things. Like when I was thinking about moving, I looked around and You kind of start going, you know, what do I want to move? Like, I don't want to lift that. I don't want to carry that. I don't want to tote that around. And I looked, I've got, you know, a few old cameras, and I kind of was like, it's just this complete cold feeling. Like, if I just put those all in a box and put them outside, I would not miss them. You know, it's like, why do I, like, all of a sudden they were just completely not serving a purpose. Like, a lot of things that I make, I enjoy looking at. They're out in, you know, kind of like the living area, and this is kind of like a little hallway. There's a closet on one side, and then like a shelf, and it was just a big mirror. I'm like, well, there's mirrors on the closets, sliding doors, and there's a mirror on the other side. So I just stacked up a bunch of wine boxes and kind of made a little area where I was putting just a bunch of stuff, but it turned out to be mostly cameras. And, you know, outside of cleaning them, dusting, but it was, again, this different thing where I'm just a different me. And then there was this kind of like this, you know, should I just get rid of them? And that's what kind of Mosher and I were talking about. He said, well, that's that, like, Duncan and I were talking about cognitive dissonance. And I said, oh, what's that? He says, well, when you have those, you know, two kind of combative, opposing thoughts, you know, you really, really like something, but you don't see a use for it, or you want to get rid of something, but yet you still want to keep it, or I really want to move, I really don't want to move. And that conflict, I think you can feel it. And if you're vibrating a little higher, and you know, you're aware of it, going, oh wow, you can kind of tell that it's like not a comfortable feeling. And then, and that's kind of where I was after I finished recording this episode. I was like, well, what do you do with that then? You know, and that's kind of the thought process I'm at now, is like, all right, like the moving thing, I was just like, okay, man, it's going to back that up in my brain. Like, oh, next week I'm going, or oh, I'm going to try to contact, or I'm going to Google. It's like, I'm just stopping all thought kind of on that. And I did kind of some little things around the house, which is always a key. You know, when I focus on woodworking and a couple little projects, it's like, oh, all is good. And but that popped up in my head again. And I was like, you know, this, the piece I'm working on right now is like my favorite piece of wood in the world. I always kind of have this claim to fame. Claim to fame where I don't buy wood. It's always found wood, and it's always cooler, and there's a bunch of it. Why would I pay for wood? Blah, blah, blah. Every once in a while, I will. But I went and spent $140 on a piece of wood. It's called a Live's Edge slab. And I didn't even know what these really were until probably 4 or 5 years ago. And then I always wanted one, but just not wanted one, but like, oh, as a some sort of table, or, you know, entertainment center or dresser drawer, you know, something with the top being that live edge slab. I stumbled upon a table that was discarded. Walked by it a couple times. I just thought the top looked kind of cheap, and it made the bottom look cheap. And then I think the third time I walked by it, I went over and I touched the bottom, and it was metal. I was like, and I kept feeling around because I couldn't tell of the finish, because it was kind of a faux distressed finished. I kept feeling around. I'm like, this entire bottom base is metal. And it was kind of cool. It had like an industrial look to it, but the top looked like kind of fake strips of wood. Like, it looked like kind of plastic. It turned out to be real wood, but it was just, you know, I don't know. It just kind of made the whole thing cheap. Anyways, I just picked it up, and it wasn't that heavy, and I toted it all the way home. And I'm like, I'm just going to take this top off. So I took the top off, and I just cleaned up the bottom a little bit. Then I kind of polyurethaned it a couple times because it was exactly like what I love. It's kind of this rusty looking metal, and it's like all dark, and it's like, it's just like really cool looking. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I just got to put a piece of wood on top of this, and then I got a table. And I'm like, wow, what if I can find? So anyways, went search, found it. And I'm completely in love with this piece of wood. And this is what I'm talking about. Like, I'm sanding in it, and I'm staining in it, and I'm looking at it, and I walk by the cameras, and I'm like, why do I have those? You know, like, there's this part going, okay, I'm only going to keep stuff, like this shredding, this peeling back, this getting rid of. But, and I like the moment with Mosher, like, he'll just say, that's cognitive dissonance. And I'm like, oh, okay, there's a term for that, and I got to be aware of that. He's like, hey, you got to wonder why you're, you know, being so hard on yourself when you ask somebody something. You know, that's the thing. You got to look at that. So it's really cool when a really, really good friend can kind of call you out, but in a dope way, and in a way you kind of like, because you know why he's doing it. You know, like, it's like why I bring up things to people. It's like, well, so you can get better. So it's just kind of this, like, being okay with the disarray. You know, you have this vision and this clarity. It's like, well, today I'm going to throw everything I don't want and keeping what I want. And it's like, I'm going to paint the walls today and fill the holes because I'm moving. And it doesn't have to be so finite. But I think I crave for that finite. So I'm like, okay, I made that decision. That's done. That's out. That's gone. I no longer think of it. And you can't do that with everything. Because as in life, things take time. Last thing was kind of an update. This is just poetic to me. You know, dentist, if you've listened to this podcast for the last 6 years, you know that that's my nemesis. But it's gotten better, it's gotten better, it's gotten better. But it got to a point where it's okay. Kind of leveled off. Didn't seem like I was having any problems, but I got to go get this deep cleaning every 3 months. Went in 2 weeks ago and be like, okay, come back in 6 months. Didn't say anything. I hadn't been there in over, I know, for a year. And then no longer every 3 months, every 6 months. I'm like, okay, the dentist moment experience got better. Like, this is ridiculous. Everything's getting better in my life and blah, blah, blah. But she did say, hey, have you seen my mother, who's like the regular dentist? You know, for like cavity. I said, no, I said, I thought about that. I'm like, I didn't know if you were just doing that or whatever. And she's like, well, just make an appointment. So I make an appointment. And it's really cool because I'm like really aware. I'm like, that trip was the best trip ever. And now good news, you know, you weren't here for a whole year. You missed 4 sessions. Not a problem. Like, it was just this positive, because she didn't say anything. And then instead of come back in 3 months, it was 6 months. So I was just like stoked. So I was probably the most calm I've ever been going to this one, because it's just check for cavities. I'm like, easy. Close. This is the Hollywood office. So I was like in there, like, got there in like 10 minutes. I was there early, popped up. And I have 2 cavities. And it was just, I don't know. It was like, what? I'm like, I've been doing so, there's a bit of me where I went, wait a minute. I've been like rock star with my teeth. And that's why, like, I don't have to come back every 3 months with your daughter. And I got to go back in, you know, 2 weeks and get them filled. And I'm like, whatever. It didn't really bother me. And they got in the car and I was like, well, think about it. You haven't gone to the dentist at all in a year. And the year before that, you have just been, you know, it probably over 2 years since I really got like the dental checkup. Because I think if anything was glaring or obvious or bad, her daughter, who does the specialist doing the deep cleaning, would have noticed it. But, like, again, she just said, hey, go check it out. So there it was. So I thought, all right. I think when I was kind of lax about my teeth, that's what was kind of like coming. Like, those were happening. Not, well, in the last 6 months, you haven't been bad or you haven't been good with your teeth, and that's why you got cavities. I think those 2 cavities were kind of the whatever byproduct of when I, you know, kind of laxed on my teeth there for a while. Hopefully that was a scenario, but it didn't bum me out. I didn't trip out that I had to go back. I wasn't like, oh no, I just like really didn't care. And that was like the win for me. Cause I did think it was poetic that I go on the podcast and during the episode go, wow, the dentist thing got better. And then the next day I go back in and it's like, oh, got 2 cavities. So it, you know, to me, it was just gleaming. It's not what happens. It's how you respond. So you ain't gotta like it. You know, that cognitive dissonance just really stuck with me. And just thinking about that, you know, the dueling concepts or the duality, the opposing thoughts, You know, just having that inside of you. Like you want to hurry up and get something done, but you dread it. Or you're really excited about something, but you have to wait. You know, the yin and the yang, the push and the pull, the up and the down. It's a constant. And I think dealing with that is a huge, huge, huge skill we should all develop. One I am definitely going to work on. Thank you for being you. Thank you for listening. You are worth it. To your pro you moment. This sounds cool, doesn't it? Pro you, for you, a positive thing. Let's do that thing. Seated, legs folded, butterflied if we can. Eyes closed, neutral neck, shoulders over the hips, navel tucked into the spine. We're going to draw that inhale through the nose. We're going to allow the exhale out the mouth. We're going to slow those down. We're going to elongate them. We're going to focus on them, connecting the mind to the body, making us present, making us perfect for the pro you moment. But it won't stay that way, probably. So, when anything else enters the space between your ears, kindly, calmly, ask it to leave. Return to your breath. Do this for 180 seconds to the best of your ability. I will let you know when time is up. You may begin now. Thank you. Bravo. Well done. It's a great thing when all you have to do is finish something and you were successful. Make it to the end and you won. It's kind of the secret behind the little things done consistently thing. The great thing about having a friend like Mosher is he lives a life that is examined by himself, and he shares, and that resonates with me deeply. And I think my quest to evolve resonates with him as well. And thus his comment. About how we live. Intentional living. And I would say living efficiently. But to me that's like stuff I never talked about. 20s, 30s, even 40s. And there's not a lot of people I get to chit-chat about that stuff with. So there's a little part of me that's like going, yay. Look at the little things that you're doing differently. It may not happen a lot, but when you do talk to that special person, and you're talking about the same things because you're on the same page, and you're learning about yourself and you're growing and you're evolving. And that's what's important. And that's what occupies the space between your ears and all that other stuff. Just slowly decreases in value. All the stuff I chased for 50 years really didn't add a whole lot to my life, to my personal value, to the betterment of me. But I'm digging me now. No matter what I'm going through, no matter what I'm feeling, no matter what I'm learning, no matter what I'm discovering about me, I truly like me. And that's big. I hope you like you. Peace and God bless.